Hello, Una Doherty.
Hello, Catherine. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for participating to this conference on the body's voices. We have the chance today of having you recite two of your poems. The first one entitled Flesh Flesh, dated to 2014, written for Hope Hunt and the Ascension into Lazarus, which is presented here in Poitiers at the Accor Festival. And a second one, Fires of Need, written in 2015 and 2016. So can you briefly present us these poems, the context of writing?
Mm-hmm. So the first one, Flesh Flesh, I wrote that in the very early days of making the Hope Hunt with my friend Neil Brown. And normally the way I start a show is either writing scraps of dialogue or poetry and make a collage of images of the type of themes that we're riffing on. And so I think that was part of the offering to Neil in the first days of research and development to make the show. And it wasn't written to be in the show. It's just to get in the vibe kind of thing. And then the first kind of versions of Hope Hunt was just 20 minutes in the theater. And there was no car. The car kind of came later. And I think that's when the poem then started to be played as part of the show.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Great. So now can, if you want to...
Shall I say the first poem or explain the second first?
As you wish.
Maybe I'd say Flesh Flesh. So this is a Hope Hunt poem.
Okay.
Okay. For the histories of shock, I am flesh, I am flesh. Sunlight dots on a youthful meat, bouncing high, Amadeus audio Jaguar seat, a moist, beautiful beat. Thumps hard, testosterone and cortisol fuel the grinning mouth. Where girls do fall, night air does shout. A man's spine, your spine, splashes pools of memory. Keep her lit, it's fine inside the battled enemy. Pink flesh, dance on, a smoker's chest, a boyish spunky energy, for heart, with heart, morn sun, go on, tell me. So that's the Hope Hunt poem. That plays from the car at the beginning of the show, which was originally recorded by Neil Brown in a lovely Glaswegian accent.
Mm.
But I wonder, I think the version you're probably getting is a recording of me saying it.
Yes, it is.
So the second poem never made it to a show. It was probably in the very beginnings of whenever I was trying to invent Hard to Be Soft, which was the show that came after Hope Hunt, Hard to Be Soft, A Belfast Prayer, which is kind of a sequel to the Hope Hunt, if I'm honest. The Hunter is in Hard to Be Soft as well, but lots of other people. And so the same thing, I was probably writing scraps of things down and making collages to try and just confirm the world in my head before I invited dancers into the room so I could explain myself, as usually what I do. And this poem came from the 12th of July, where I went undercover, kind of, well, not really, to a Protestant bonfire. Because on the 12th of July in Belfast, well, in Northern Ireland, the Orange Men, the Protestant community in Ireland, burned huge bonfires in celebration of the Battle of the Boyne, I think it is, on the 12th of July. And they would burn effigies and Irish flags and political figures. And it's kind of, it's a bit Dionysian a bit, because you can go up the mountain in Belfast on that night and watch the city burn, kind of. So first time that I went into one of those bonfires, because I guess I wouldn't call myself a Catholic anymore, but I was brought up Catholic and went to a Catholic school, so you wouldn't really go to those things. So we went with a British flag in our bag because we thought we'd be found out, because we thought they would look at us and they would know that we're Catholic. But I thought we'd be okay because my accent's a bit English, so it was kind of like a stealth mission. And one of my dreams is always still to make a video of this night. So this is where the poem came from, I guess, is me looking at the bonfires. And it's called The Fires of Need. Sparkle and crack, spitting royal slaps, the deep pellet heat, roaring bucky hearts leap. burns the young faces. A night of chaos, a tribe pure wasted. Dionysus was once healed, but now long forgotten. No pagan truth, just chips gone rotten. I thought one generation away of uplift and open, but fires burn on in the hearts of young woe, surfing the escapism on wingers like Olympians. She backs in her spine. Well, at least now I know, sure I've seen it myself, new blood now in tow. History contorts in the curling of smoke, for white lightning nights Guang is a toke. Old battle chants, give us wingers in speed. Through this northern night roars the fires of need. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you very much for sharing these poems with us. And the context you gave explains a little bit the relationship between writing poetry and creating dance in your work. It's some kind of log journal, some kind of way to throw your ideas out of your mind, clear your ideas. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a little bit more for you, what is the relationship between writing poetry and creating choreographies with others or for yourself?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, for sure, those poems were at the beginning, Hope Hunt and Hard to Be Soft. And then it changes a bit show to show. Maybe because they were my first two shows, there's a lot coming out, you know? You feel like you're on fire, those first shows that you make, because it's pouring out of you, the good, the bad, the ugly. Then when I made Lady Magma, I didn't quite make a poem. I kind of tried to write a book. I wrote a series of essays with a writer. Ethan McGrath, where I was trying to write about the show, but also what is the show's relationship to my relationship to feminism, and also the 70s, I guess. So that didn't quite come out as poetry. It came more out as trying to have an argument in essay form kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then Navy was really pure and I wrote nothing down. I just danced kind of thing. So it might have changed a little bit now, my relationship to writing and choreography. But in those days, I don't know if I was so conscious of it. It was just coming out. I just had to make a collage. I still do always make a collage. Mm-hmm. But maybe I write less. I just try and get, if I have an idea, I try and keep putting it all down. Because I also feel like I have to have the show kind of made before I would audition or bring dances in. Because mm-hmm. I'm afraid of collaboration. It's maybe an ego thing, maybe to have it like gunk. Not that I would teach move for move, but I feel like if I need to be able to clearly invite a finalized world for them then to be free within it.
Uh-huh.
Or whatever that takes, if it's collage or having a playlist of music or having writing to be able to explain yourself so then they understand it to be free within it.
Right, right. Set boundaries so that then the collaboration can really take place between you and the dancers.
Yeah, I guess, especially like in Hope Bunt and Hard to Be Soft and stuff, if you're kind of taking on particular characteristics, you know, if you're asking someone to play a seven-year-old boy, they need to have a list of seven-year-old boys they can become.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like acting a bit, I suppose.
Yes. It's interesting that you speak of acting, because my next question, let's say, is twofold. It starts with the recurrence of, well, let's say the use of facial expressions in your work. I have seen Navy Blue. I have seen the facial expressions in Navy Blue. I know there's, you know, in, you know, lots of pieces, but I don't have a great video of Navy Blue, although some teasers can really show us the facial expressions of your dancers. So I would like to show an excerpt the whole teaser, one of the teasers of Navy Blue, and then I can ask the first part of my question.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Let's see. Listen, all these bodies bruised blue.
them in. That's some budget you're playing with. What does it cost? This pale blue dot. Costumes, €3,000. Light design, €3,500. Projection design, €4,500. Sound design, €7,500. Technician, €2,000. Projector hire, €2,000. Set materials, €1,000. Tech rentals, €15,000. Marketing, €1,800. Dancers, €122,835. Accommodation, €55,455. Travel, €22,800. This speech, €2,500. A total production budget of, what are we on? €291,656. And what's the point?
The face, you know, seems to be crossed by like multiple layers of different emotions, not necessarily logistically united, you know, like they're not following a logic plan. So it seems like you really use the face as a body member in itself, which is crossed by different energies, just like the head, the feet, the arms. And sometimes when we watch these expressive faces, we feel like they are on the verge of talking, or, you know, in a normal situation, they would start talking or screaming. So the first part of my question would be, are there moments while you're dancing, or when your dancers are dancing, when you feel the need of voicing? And are there certain emotions or energies that you might feel be expressed through voice? And secondly, so the twofold part, during the creation of a piece, you know, during the process of creation as a choreographer with dancers, do you allow voice or text to come out and eventually be integrated in the piece?
Okay, so that's so interesting, because I didn't think that would be the trailer that was out. But I guess now we've been running for a while, all the trailers are out. And I think it's, yeah, this is the cosmos talking to us. It's so funny that you're asking about breath, voice, possible dialogue in relation to using the 360 whole body as a limb. And you chose to show Kinder, the dancer, the artist in the film. Because Navy is the most silent of all my shows, that they say nothing.
Yeah.
And I guess that was because of the oppression in the show. I guess I wanted the dancers to in some way be less powerful than everything that's wrapped around them. But Kinder, out of all 13 dancers, Kinder was the first one and really the only one to start making noise while we were in the creation. And to raise the question, to be like, why are we fucking being quiet? Really weird. We had, you have to consciously block something. When you're really allowing everything to pour, to not allow the voice in is a conscious act to close it, you know?
Yeah.
There was that fork in the road of creation where Kinder opened that for us to be like, we're not using this limb. And I shut that down and went, you're not allowed to use that limb. I don't know if that answers your question. But I think what you were saying, you said it so beautifully about the face not quite playing the narrative of the situation it's in. It is truly that, I think, Catherine, that I use this technique I call strings, where the muscles, the bones, the hair in your face, the teeth are allowed to move and be as sensitive as the shin, the toes, the back, everything else. And if everything is listening and being sincere to being powerful and vulnerable constantly all the time, then everything comes out, you know? And then when you put that in a frame of a short film like that with a very strict narrative on top of the audio, then it, the audience does the work to kind of join the two up, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I'm sure the dancers now at this point feel the need to speak and aren't allowed to, especially probably Kinder, because it would be so natural in her natural type of work that she would make as an artist to, you know, to share the narrative wholly kind of thing. But I wouldn't let them talk in this one a bit.
In this one, yeah, I see. But it's something that comes up during the creation process. It's something, of course, that's part of the...
In Hopon, it's like it, the voice is the choreography, you know, you're going through a phonetic shout constantly. So you're seeing a 360 stutter of a man kind of thing. So that was always in it. And then in Hard to Be Soft... When I had to take the solo in Hard to Be Soft, which I believe is the sequel of Hope Hunt, Helium is the final scene. When I'm playing the same character, kind of in a similar situation as Hope Hunt, his whole life flashes before his eyes. I would find myself sometimes on a show very quietly saying things to myself on the stage, which I don't think the audience would be able to read. But when you're so... you know, you're in your own sub-narrative of what, who am I looking, I'm looking at my mom there, and then I'm picking the baby up, and then I'm running, then I'm kicking the football. When you're in the narrative, then sometimes a little line slips out here and there.
I see. So, yeah, you mentioned that I chose the example where the dancers are silent, but indeed, in many of your pieces, the dancers sometimes speak, or, you know, we hear voices or fragments of text or lines. You have danced with the Dutch company Trash, which is highly theatrical and include lots of text and voicing, you know, with dance. Mm-hmm. Let's watch an excerpt of a quick excerpt of the piece Enchanted Room.
Oh, wow. Going back to the days when I was fit and healthy. Let's have a look.
And then I ask my question.
I can't wait to see this.
What I'm trying to do here is explore exactly what it feels like.
A while ago. Yeah, fucking hell.
Very quick excerpt, but we see that text and voice are very present. Do you think the work with Trash and with Christel van Isum in terms of dance intertwined with voice and text influenced you?
In 100%. 100%. Yeah. I made two solos before eventually the Hope Hunt, which I guess was seen as my first work because it went on tour and, you know, we got paid and all that kind of official stuff. But the first time I ever made a work was in Derry, because an old teacher and another artist I know from Echo Echo kind of dared me to. He was like, I dare you to make your own thing. And so I started shouting and I didn't dance. I remember I was making it. I didn't set any movement because I kept getting so pissed off, because I was like, I have no idea if this is my movement or it's trash. It was so in the bones of me after 4 years. I was like, I don't even know what my own ideas are anymore. I think I'm just like a child of crystal, you know? So I stood still, I put a waistcoat on and I just shouted, you know, about how fucked I was. I was like, ah, rah, rah. I was doing the same talking technique that I use in the Hope Hunt, the my autism, my autism, this kind of phonetic. Which I thought was very sad, you know, but everybody laughed at it. It became a comedy. I had no idea. And I think it was after that, then, what happened? Then after that, I made the leather jacket. And one of my teachers in Trash was Guillermo Otto, who taught us the jump technique, where you kind of, it's this Ennio Greco leg jump, which I think Guy got from Ennio Greco, which I heard Ennio Greco got from a Butoh master. But anyway, in Trash, we did that movement with our legs for like 2 hours every day, jumping. Because they said they were interested in exhaustion. That's what they told us. And so I couldn't move without doing Guy's Guy's kind of jumping, lifting the shoulder blades, or a very extreme version of a woman from Crystal. Like, I couldn't get rid of the two.
Mm.
So I think I had to dilute, or I had to, like, I had to dissect it in pieces. So the first work I did, I stood still and analyzed the voice work. And then the second one, I was like, okay, I make a choreography out of the jumps for me to be able to move past it.
I see.
And then later, maybe I could find the Hope Hunt. And it was years of doing the Hope Hunt until the Hope Hunt got to go to Tilburg and Crystal got to see it. And I was so nervous that, like, you know, that she was like, my mother in dance taught me how to do it.
Mm.
And I was like, am I doing a trash spin-off? I always carried that weight with me that I'm just doing a trash spin-off. And when she saw it, she said, that's very, very you. And then I was like, okay, I can continue.
Wow.
I felt allowed to continue but then also you realize some things maybe that I thought I learned from trash, I brought to trash. And then I learned a lot from them, but because it was my first ever job and I was with them for 4 years, and it's such an intense type of job. It's not like low 22 dances, different choreo. It was like, it's its own very flavorful thing. It took a while to, allow yourself to grow out of it a bit, you know. But I think there'll always be a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, trash salt on me, because it was brilliant. I love it so much, you know.
Let's move the topic of the voice in certain of your pieces. The soundtrack is made of voices, fragments of conversations or screams. I have a few examples to show. First of all, an excerpt of the solo entitled Lazarus and the Birds of Paradise, which opens Heart to Be Soft, and the solo entitled Helium, which closes the same piece. And finally, an excerpt of your collaboration with Mark Leckie at the Tate Britain.
Oh, yeah. We keep getting this video, and Mark hasn't finished the video, but anyway, okay.
So three short excerpts and then question.
Yeah, cool.
People aren't too bad, but Sid and A-10.
No fun in going to school and shit like that there. May as well get our fun out of doing our own shit. Like, so nobody's taking us serious, so when they see what we're doing, they'll know that we're serious.
Me and Lock instead of a bird.
If you're a problem,
Almost dead.
Adidas.
State Boots.
North Face.
Stone Island.
We're on the Stone Island.
And
we're Stone Islanders.
BMW.
Dead Space 3.
Half-Life 2.
Resident Evil Biohazard.
Don't fucking beep at me!
Me?
Back again.
Where you been?
Where you been?
Where have you been?
Back again.
Sit by us and moan.
I want...
What's up?
Just... I want to get off.
Get off?
I want to get off and leave this place.
Okay.
What one?
I just want...
Get off.
Where?
Anywhere.
London.
London.
Of course.
Get off.
Just anywhere. Out of here. Out of this, wouldn't you?
What?
Get off.
We're stuck here.
What, here?
Stuck.
Head stuck up his arse.
Stuck.
Who do you think you are?
Think you're better than us?
Might be all right for you, but it's not for us.
He's away with the fairies, lad.
Away.
Ah. Away.
Any road, let's get off.
Let's get off. See you later.
Bye then.
I wish. Come take me out of this dull world.
Let me out.
Who's there? What? I see ya.
Come on. Take my hand.
What?
Come up in the world.
That's not possible.
Everything is possible.
What?
Two, three, and up.
As a dancer, let's say while you're dancing, how do you connect to the voices on tape? Do you feel like your dancing somehow echoes or amplifies, expands these voices, or maybe that you're kind of talking through them or they're talking through you? How does that work?
So in Lazarus, the first clip, which is the ending of the Hope Hunt and the beginning of Hard to Be Soft, so you guys will see it. The white tracksuit. The dancer tries to become every voice,
mm-hmm.
moment by moment, as soon as the voice changes, from head to toe. You know, like 360 lip sync. So that one, you have to be on it. You have to be every person, so know what they're saying. So be the person, know who they're looking at. What are they saying? Where are they in every moment? And then the same recordings was mixed with David Holmes' track for the Helium. So it's the same Lazarus audio, but it's mixed with multiple other sounds from David Holmes. And in Helium, it's not quite, you become occasionally, you do the 360 lip sync where you become the person, mm-hmm. but also all those people are just on stage with you, because it's kind of when the hunter finally walks through the gates out of limbo, uh-huh. and into heaven or hell. So he's not only just becoming the people where he's trapped in a limbo and he's just doing his past, they're just there with him. So sometimes he becomes the person, and sometimes he just hears the person and it comes through and breaks him like stained glass. Boof, you just become light again.
Mm.
It's like when they say that your whole life flashes before your eyes, it's a bit more like that in Helium. Mm. And then with Mark, I mean, Mark was able to do what I always wanted to do for the Hope Hunt and for Hard to Be Soft was to go and record my own. That recording came from a YouTube mockumentary filmed in Belfast by Not As Such Films called We Bastards. So you can watch that on YouTube, and the audio from the shows is in that mockumentary.
Mm.
And I wanted to record my own, and I brought my audio recording into Highbank Young Offenders Prison and stuff, and I was trying to do it. But that's a whole other art form to be that talented with community work to make it useful for you and useful for the other people so that you're not mm-hmm. taking from them. Mm-hmm. Plus also the other level of being an artist of understand the best audio systems to be recording and editing systems. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm still a bit too busy dancing to get super deep into that. So I got permission from Not As Such to use their film. But then Mark has done that, you know, his whole art career is like he can make the soundscape from scratch. He met mm-hmm. those lads under the bridge. And so we recorded them and built the bridge in the Tate and put them in the Tate like thoroughbred, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I have you know, what a legend. But my relationship in that work to the audio is not so tight because I was brought in a few days before, you know.
Really?
I think, yeah, and I was just kind of like in the hotel room listening to it, and then I just showed up, had a practice and filmed it, and that was it kind of thing, because it was for his opening of the bridge in the Tate. So I was just invited to come in and do something. So I just took movement that I already knew from the Hope Hunt. So you can see the character is the same. It's the same guy, same kind of uniform and same kind of movement. So I was like, I'll just do him and then I'll try as much to link up to his sound as much as I can in the 2 days. Because when you do it super point by point lip sync, for me, it takes weeks of rehearsal. So it couldn't be so tight. I could hook into the main parts of the soundscape, and then in between I had to just flow with it and just let them be with me rather than become them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was mm-hmm. a bit more looser.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of this lad in Hope Hunt, so the show which is presented here in Poitiers, so you mime, well, you and your dancers eventually, because here in Poitiers you do not dance the piece.
Mm-hmm.
So the dancer mimes, embodies young lads having a carry out and messing about hoods, as you describe it. So let's watch a quick excerpt.
Moi, et non mais moi. Et toi, Stéphanie. Et moi. Et non, et moi, Stéphanie. Et toi, putain de merde, Stéphanie. Et putain de merde. Arrête, arrête. Et non, et moi, et toi.
Yeah, so of course, I know that the piece is not about literally enacting, you know, someone else. I know it's not a virtuosity exercise, but their way of moving, of inhabiting the space, become one of the many layers which compose your dancing. But if we think of the topic of voice, like used figuratively? Like, would you say that Hope Hunt is a piece which gives space to their voice, or which allows their voice, you know, marginalized voice, eventually to be heard? Or do you not want to go into that field?
Yeah, you know, it's a weird one because, I mean, Hope Hunt's old now. You know, it was made in 1516. So it feels different. The frame keeps shifting on it. At the beginning, I just was in Belfast and talking to Neil from Glasgow and talking about when we were in school in the 90s and reminiscing about the haircuts and the clothes that we wore, the crisps that we eat, the jewellery we wore, the music we listened to. Mm. Started from that, you know. And it wasn't so consciously about class because we were just talking about school in the back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I do still even think if you play the Hope Hunt in Scotland or in Belfast, I mean, it depends where you play Hope Hunt, the frame of it. What am I trying to say? I think that's I don't know where to stand with that statement of giving voice to people because I'm getting paid, I'm selling the show. And to be honest, mostly the show goes to quite arty dance festivals. Mm-hmm. Most of the audience is full of programmers and dancers. Mm-hmm. So who are you giving voice to if that's the people who's listening to it? I don't think that does anything.
Actually, yeah.
That's maybe taking it and profiting on it is more closely to home of maybe the reality of what the Hope Hunt has done. Mm-hmm. I don't think we did it I didn't consciously try and do that, and it's not in a malicious way.
Yeah.
But I can't sit in an interview and say I'm giving voice to people when I sell it to art festivals.
Of course.
It depends on the frame of where it's played and who's watching it, I guess,
yeah.
You know? And also the other thing that Hope Hunt is coming from 2016 up into 2022, like just the whole fashion thing of like, you know, we went through that whole wave of the 90s coming back and of, you know, Golf GTIs and Kappa tracksuit becoming a symbol again of like rich Amsterdam kids at a rave. It wasn't, it got twisted into money. Mm-hmm. So now when the Hope Hunt plays and they show up in a Golf GTI and they do, you know, they do this, it's kind of like, I don't know if it still is now, but for a couple of years there it was kind of fashionable. Mm-hmm. Which is I think maybe a different class,
yeah,
no, or something. So I'm not really sure what, I don't know if I have one sentence to hold it into a place. I'm just like, it was what it was, and we just keep letting it live through while time changes. And it's good and it's bad, it's ugly and it's great all at the same time. Rather than, I mean, if you play the Hope Hunt now, if Mufasa does a Hope Hunt where she came in her home street, it means something different than Mufasa doing the Hope Hunt. Mufasa's going to do the Hope Hunt in Dublin now, Black Girl from Paris, that means something different. You know, and yeah. It meant a different thing for me, and people saw me as a real Belfast kid doing it in Paris. Mm-hmm. People thought it was about Belfast. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, I think it's more complex than that, you know. It depends mm-hmm. on who's in the room that night.
Mm-hmm. Well, the power of that piece is being able to grasp, you know, with your body a certain figure, you know, that we can all relate to somehow, regardless.
Yeah, I mean, the figures past. Like also, I mean, like there's characters in there, I guess, you know, like
yeah.
What's his name, Saeed from Laenid. It's more Saeed than Vincent Cassell, actually. Mm-hmm. Saeed is more vulnerable, and there's people like that. What I would explain to Mufasa and Saeed that came into my mind when I was doing it, because it's like that. I'm not being him, but that's a good already existing image, moving image of that sensation of actually you're a bit vulnerable, so you're pretending you're fine. It's more like the quality of masking fear is more prevalent, I think, in the Hope Hunt than any kind of pinpointing into a particular group of people.
Right.
Because I think all that and like the leg shaking and that, all that bravado, white peacocking is like, I'm nervous. Because if you're really centered and you're really grand, you don't do shit, you know? You sit still. So it's more about fear, I think, or nervousness fitting in. And the other thing is like, I mean, because I did the Hope for so long, there's like, there's layers, I guess, to all shows, if you do it for long enough, that you have like the character that you're aware on the skin surface of the audience viewing for the first time. But then underneath that is there's a bit of you in there. A you at 7, you at 13, you at 25. There's those levels of the nervous system in there. And then I know only now, because after doing a few years and when my mum came to see it, my mum was like, I can see your dad. So my dad's in there. My brother's in there, and the same would be for Mufasa and Safi. So the only way for you, for the audience to see that surface line or characters from films is for us to be able to, like, come from some sincerity, which is not pretending to be a guy in the street. It's understanding the rhythm of that emotional movement, the kinetics of the emotion, and then being like, oh, fuck, oh, I remember when this happened to me or when my brother did that or this or that. And then it's just real lived, you know, happiness or real lived fear, and then everybody understands what you're doing, maybe.
Yeah definitely. Yeah. I have one last question for you about your latest piece, Navy Blue. Around the middle of the piece, of course, you recite this this text which you have written in collaboration with Bush Muzarko. Let's watch a teaser where we can hear this text juxtaposed to the dancers.
Are we floating? Where are we falling? Can a thing be falling if it ever hits the ground? Unless everything's falling. Am I falling? I'm the one in blue. Next to the one in blue. Next to the one in blue. Such a small thing. Almost nothing. Surrounded by darkness. Surrounded by all that space. Surrounded by what's called everything else. A small, insignificant thing on a small, insignificant thing. A pale blue dot on a pale blue dot. And that dancer, a microcosm of everyone you love, everyone you know, every human being who ever was. When she raises her hand, it's not her hand rising, all the hands rising. When he turns his head, it's not his head turning, all the heads turning. My head's turning, my head's turned, spinning, like the world spins on its axis, around and around and around and around to end up where we started, falling. Creator and destroyer of civilizations. Every young couple in love. Every mother and father, hopeful child, my child. Pale pink dot. Little insignificant thing. What's she gonna be? Out of a pale pink dot grew every inventor. Out of a pale pink dot grew every explorer. Every corrupt politician, every Jim Crow, Donald Trump or Arlene Foster, every Marine Le Pen, Margaret Thatcher or Adolf Hitler, every Xi Jinping, Idi Amin or Kim Jong-un, every Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg or Anders Breivik, every Harvey Weinstein, Simon Lindbergh or Dr. Luke, every Maya Forstater, Luca Magnotta, Ben Shapiro, Jordan Peterson, Ben Van Verden, Joseph Mengele, Bernie Randolph or Dominique Strauss-Kahn, every Sarah Palin, every Leopold II or Leopold III, presumably the fourth, every Ronald Reagan or Vladimir Putin, every one of them, every single one of them, a pale pink dot and this pale blue dot. Just a little mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam, struggling for significance.
Yeah, so this text is poetically, politically, rhythmically very strong, and the volume and saturation when we're in the theater makes us feel like we're really surrounded by your voice, you know, reciting this text. Have you asked your dancers what is the effect of your voice reciting this text on their dancing? Was that a topic that popped out in your conversation with the dancers while creating the piece? Does that give them energy, direction, or do they hear it just as they would hear piano or guitar?
That's a good question. I don't think I'd ask them. poor dancers. Well, I think I knew I was going to do that, you know, and I knew it would interfere with the physical state we were working on, that I would ask them for. And so I knew that they had to fight against it. And, it doesn't help the physical state I'm asking for. It kind of gets in the way a little bit. And I always thought when it was leading up to the premiere, I was like, we'll do one tech dress rehearsal where they just do it with no speech. We'll have simple music and we'll do one with the speech. Because I was like, maybe it's too much. But then we went with the too much version. Mm. Because we've been working on this, you know, this 360 use everything, but it was really, I was really pushing the dancers to like, can you, I don't know how to explain it. I can do it, I could teach in a workshop, but it's hard to explain the state. But it's really a difficult state for dancers who have danced a lot to do, including myself. And it's about regaining love for yourself and your dancing. So you have to keep going back to kind of submission and love and open and submission and love. And that kind of a speech on top makes you want to go, you know. So they have to keep practicing love. But, of course, the tension comes out because they're existing in the space of that in it, I guess. Mm-hmm, that answers the question.
Yeah, definitely. And the result is this very
tense.com.
Strange and mysterious and beautiful piece.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. Thank you very much for participating to the conference, and hope to see another piece very soon.
Thank you so much, Catherine. It's been great.
Thank you.